Henry, dear, said Mrs. Henry Brown, you always disappear when the evening sun goes down. You eat my meat and drink my chicken soup. Then I notice that you fly the coop. You can't pass through that door without your mama anymore. 'Cause mama goes where papa goes, or papa don't go out tonight. Mama goes 'cause mama knows you can't be trusted out of her sight. Mama's got a feeling that she must be near just to help her papa keep his conscience clear. So mama goes where papa goes, or papa don't go out tonight. No, 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 papa don't go out tonight.
Good evening, good evening, and welcome.
Hello, friends. Welcome to another edition of the Ragged Antique Phonograph Program.
I'm here, Mike the Barber.
And me, Mac, at the phonograph.
Me, Mac, you, Jane.
Yeah. Playing, hey, watch it there. Playing the records and here tonight to entertain you.
Yeah, in all your audible glory.
All our lo-fi glory.
We started out from 1923 with that Vocalion label. That was a Miss Patricola.
One of those nice, creamy, brown, shellac-colored records. I love those.
Yeah, it's like...
for the color of them.
It's like flan. Mama goes where papa goes.
I think that record's really valuable because of the color.
Yeah, I saw the post today as we're taking turns, and I saw your Phono Dudes post.
Yeah, I did a post today about the value of records. We'll talk a little bit more about that later.
Sure.
About how much are your 78s worth, actually?
It's the big question of the evening. It's almost like a Jeopardy question.
Yes.
But we don't need it in the form of an answer. Tonight on the show, we got a lot of good stuff, as we always do. We got some George Olsen, got King Oliver.
We got some baseball-themed stuff since baseball season is starting.
Yeah.
And in reference to the value of records, I have the one record that the people with the least amount of knowledge always think is the most valuable.
Red Label Columbia?
Nope, wrong. But close on the color of the label.
Blue Decca?
Nope.
Is it an artist or a song?
Both.
Oh. Should we save it for later? Save it for later so you come back.
Okay.
We got a lot of stuff to go
through. Let's continue now. It's a rainy evening here in New York.
Yeah.
And here doing some music on the cusp of jazz is Joseph C. Smith's orchestra with Rainy Day Blues.
I gotta change the record still. Oh boy, here
well,
we go.
While Mac does that, I could tell you a little story that I'll talk to you about after this recording is done.
Thank you.
Rainy Day Blues from 1919, Joseph C. Smith's orchestra, who also did Yellow Dog Blues, if you know that, with the laughing trombone.
They're, you know, sort of a pickup band, a Victor House Orchestra, trying to keep up with the times there, trying to get jazzy. Jazz is the new hot thing, so they're trying to keep up with it.
They were trying to keep up with it. I think they were keeping up with it. It was
a
fine pace.
Good job.
It was a fine pace.
Absolutely.
So we got the comments coming in so far. If you want, we do look at the comment board as the show is going on live right now. And, you know, see Ken from Hyde Park is asking, or well, his daughter's asking, what's the oldest record? And I see you popped a website in there.
Oh, yeah, it's a good website you could check out, Ken, called First Sounds, which talks about the first recorded stuff. And what that's all about. What do you got next, Mike?
What do I got? Well, I want to pair the song that you did, which is a rain song, with a one that I got here, which a lot of you will know from Al Jolson's catalog. But this is Gene Roderick's orchestra version from 1921 of April Showers. From 1921, that was Gene Roderick's orchestra with April Showers, a nice instrumental there.
I remember Bugs Bunny's version of that.
Oh, yeah? Which one do you think's better?
I think the
Elmer
Gene Roderick. No, it was Bugs. It was sort of mumbling it.
Yeah.
I remember. So many of these songs I got to know from those Warner Brothers cartoons.
Of course, and whenever I play some of this stuff for people who don't avidly listen to it. They always say, oh, it sounds like old cartoons.
Yeah, or they say, it sounds like Little Rascals music.
Sounds like Little Rascals. Sounds like those old Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
Looney Tune cartoons.
Yeah, those guys were totally referencing so much of this material.
Yeah.
And they had like the little vaudeville shows and the cartoons and stuff.
Sure.
Remember the one where Daffy Duck's greatest trick?
His greatest trick? What was that?
Where it's like a whole vaudeville show. And
does he saw someone in half?
No, he blows himself up.
Oh, okay.
And Bugs is like, that was great. They love you. He's like, come on out for an encore. And he's already like floating up to heaven. He's like, the problem is I can only do it once.
Ba-dum-bum.
But the thing is, he can't get any attention on the vaudeville stage until he blows himself up.
Right,
kills himself.
Right. I would have thought like his beak ended up turning around and being behind
him. He did that, and no one reacted.
Oh.
And Bugs Bunny would just step on the stage, and they'd give him massive applause.
What do they want, blood?
It's actually a pretty good vaudeville one. You got to watch it.
All right, I'll YouTube it.
Let's move on.
I'll YouTube it.
Let's move on to sports, Mike.
Oh, my favorite
subject. A subject we're both really into. You know those games where they use balls?
We could actually do a sports show.
About not knowing about sports?
About not knowing too much about sports. We are so efficient in it.
There's already a show on FMU like that.
Really?
Yeah, Sportsy Talk. Yeah.
So what do we have? I saw in the paper yesterday that it's Yankee. They started the game.
Opening day this week.
Opening day.
The season has opened for all those baseball fans.
With metal detectors.
They're very happy. And DeWolf Hopper recorded Casey at the Bat the first time in 1906, and he was already a big hit traveling around the country since the 1890s, reciting this thing at baseball games and parties and so on. He was a sensation, and he put it on to record, and really, he built his life practically around this song and his other acting performances.
Right. Well, it had to be big. It's a 12-inch, I see.
It's a 12-inch record.
Yeah.
And it's a very impassioned performance of this tune. So
stay with it.
Stay with it. And dedicated to baseball season opening this week, here's Casey at the Bat.
And so when Cooney died at first and Burrows did the same, a sickly silence fell upon the patrons of the game. A straggling few got up to go and beat death there. The rest clung to that hope which springs eternal in the human breast. And they thought if only Casey could but get a whack at that, we'd put up even money now with Casey at the bat. But grim preceded Casey, as did also Jimmy Blake. And the former was a no-good and the latter was a fake. So upon that stricken multitude, grim melancholy sat, for there seemed but little chance of Casey's getting to the bat. But Flynn let drive a single to the wonderment of all, and Blake the much despised thought that cover of the ball. And when the dust had arisen and the men saw what had occurred, there was Blake at safe at second and Flynn a hugging third. Then from 10,000 throats went up on a yell. It rumbled in the valley, it rattled in the dell. It knocked upon the mountain top and recoiled upon the flat. For a case, my case, was advancing for the bat. So there was pride in Casey's bearing as he stepped into his place. There was ease in Casey's manner and a smile on Casey's face. And when, responding to the cheers, he lightly doffed his hat, no stranger in the crowd put doubt. It was Casey of the bat. 10,000 eyes were on him as he rubbed his hands with dirt. 10,000 hands applauded as he wiped them on his shirt. And when the writhing kicker ground the ball into his hip, defiance gleamed in Casey's eyes. A sneer curled Casey's. And now the leather-covered sphere comes whirling through the air, and Casey stood watching it in lofty grandeur there. Throws by the dirty batsman the ball, and he did say, "That ain't my style," said Casey. "The right one," the umpire said. Then from the benches, black with people went up a muffled roar. I like the beaten storm waves on a stern and distant shore. Kill him!
Kill the umpire!
Cried someone on the sand, and it's likely they'd have killed him had not Casey raised his hand. With a smile of Christian charity, great Casey stood his stand. He stilled the rising tumult. He bade the game go on. each signal to the picker. Once more the spheroid flew, but Casey still ignored it. And the umpire said, "Strike two!" The roar cried the maddened thousand, and echo answered fraud. But one on the look from Casey, and the multitude was awed. They saw his face grow stern and cold. They saw his muscles strain. And they knew that Casey wasn't left at all. Goodbye. Again. The smile is gone from Casey's face. His teeth are clinched in a haze. He pounds with cruel violence. He's dashed over the place. And now the picker holds the ball. And now he lets it go. And now the air is shattered by the fall. The face is low. Oh, somewhere in this favored land, the sun is shining bright. Somewhere bands are playing, and somewhere hearts are light. Somewhere men are laughing, and somewhere children shout. But there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck out.
You know what's funny is that they were actually at one point thinking of replacing the Star Spangled Banner at games with that record.
Really?
Yeah, they were thinking of having everyone just repeat that.
Wow.
No. That would have been awful. People would have, they wouldn't have been, couldn't have got through one line.
Yeah, it couldn't have been. But what an impassioned recitation, eh?
Yes, yes.
I
the
love
Wolf
his
Hopper.
Style.
The Wolf Hopper. What else did he do? What else did he record?
He didn't. I don't really know of any of his other recordings. He was an actor.
Mm-hmm.
I think. You know what? I don't know of any other recordings by him. If he did any other ones, if this might be his only one,
so it's a rarity.
Well, there were a lot of them.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly rare.
Oh, okay. But it's.
But you know, it being his only recording.
And he just did it over the years for different labels and different.
Yes.
And formats,
like I said,
of it.
Before 1906, he was already established as a star because of reading this and his appearances on stage and at events. So he was well-known already for this.
Oh. Well, speaking of events, I just got back from Vegas.
That's right. Did you have a good time?
I had a good time.
You were there for all that rockabilly stuff.
That's right. I was there for Viva Las Vegas. It was the 18th year. I met a bunch of fans of our show, and it was very nice to dance with some of them and do a meet and greet and all that. While I was out there, I went to the Las Vegas Phonograph Company.
Oh, yeah. What was that like?
It was a really, really cool shop. It was it's owned by a fantastic guy named Doug, who's super friendly. And, you know, when you go into certain phonograph-related stores or shops, they're kind of grumpy sometimes, I feel like.
Yeah, that's the old style.
Yeah, they're not in the mood to show you.
Like, Doug, here comes another young whippersnapper, don't know nothing about no phonographs.
Doug's the total opposite. He couldn't be kinder. He couldn't be sweeter. He really wants to educate you when you walk in.
People need that because they don't know what they're doing with these machines.
Yeah, yeah. And he told a beautiful story of a woman who walked by when he was setting up the shop the first week, and she came in, didn't say anything. She just came over and gave him a hug. And he said, "Oh, what's that for?" She said, "Thank you for being here." Because
nice.
he's carrying on a legacy of old records.
It's one thing to sell a machine, but giving the people the advice about how to operate is even more important. Because once you get it, people have to know they have to change the needle every time.
Right.
Which records to choose based upon the labels, how much to crank it. What kind of upkeep does this thing need?
Yeah, and he does all repairs as well. So, you know, so if you're in Nevada, go check out the Las Vegas Phonograph Company. Talk to Doug. Tell him Mac and Mike sent you over. And speaking of Mac, your postcard is in his store.
Yeah, because I met him a few years ago.
Okay.
He had a smaller space inside one of the Antiques malls.
Right.
I left him my card and we talked a while.
Yeah.
But now I'm really excited that he opened up
a
store.
A big space.
Is it filled with a lot of cool machines?
Oh, my God. I should have took a count of how many. I'd
did
say
you
there's
take
really.
Pictures?
There, yeah, I did. But I mean, there's at least 30 machines in there, at least minimum.
If, disc and cylinder?
Oh, yeah. Disc cylinder. He's got 1890 stuff in there. I mean, he sells a nice collection of 78s as well. Mm-hmm. Really good. I mean, pop stuff, and it's organized.
Prices?
Very fair. Extremely fair.
Can't wait to go there.
Extremely fair. So,
so good to hear about a store opening up dedicated to the gramophones.
Yes, do check them out. I know they're on Facebook, the Las Vegas Phonograph Company.
Fantastic.
All right, let's jump ahead to 1925 right now. Very popular one by the nasal vocalist Irving Kaufman. And here he is doing 5'2", Eyes of Blue.
I just saw a maniac, yes, a maniac, wild and tearing his hair. He was jumping like a jumpin' jack, jumpin' jack, jumpin' jack. Child, you should have been there. Why, I laughed so loud I thought that I would cave in when I heard that silly daffodilly, he was raving. 5'2", eyes of blue, but oh, what those 5 foot could do. Has anybody seen my girl? With turned up nose, turned down hose, flapper, yes sir, one of those. Has anybody seen my girl? Now if you run into a 5'2" covered with fur, diamond rings and all those things, bet your life it isn't her. But could she love, could she woo, could she coo? Has anybody seen my girl? Love made him a lunatic, a lunatic, a lunatic. Gee, he hollered and cried like a monkey on a stick, on a stick, on a stick. He was fit to be tied. When we asked him for his wife's description, why, he just answered all of us with this conniption. 5'2", eyes of blue, but oh, what those 5 foot to do. Has anybody seen my girl? Half a chill, half a pint, she could thrill you like a giant. Has anybody seen my girl? Now if you run into this 5'2", listen, old sport. Two can do what you can do. Steal my pint, I'll steal your quart. But could she love, could she woo, could she Charleston too? Has anybody seen my girl? Now if you run into a 5'2" that's covered with fur, with diamond rings and all those things, bet your life it isn't her. Can she dance? Can she eat? Take my tip, don't feed her meat. Has anybody seen my girl?
Oliver with Snake Rag from 1923. Louis Armstrong was in the band there playing Swanee Whistle.
Yeah, and we should mention that we're talking with the folks at the Louis Armstrong Museum about doing either remote broadcast there or a pre-recorded show featuring all recordings of Louis Armstrong, and we're hoping that they're going to let us play stuff from their collection.
Yep, they're located where his house was. He bought in the early 40s, him and his wife, in Corona, Queens.
Right. And we should also mention, speaking of remotes, on the 28th of this month, we're going to be at the Kingsland Manor in Nutley, New Jersey. We're going back to my hometown.
Yes.
So we want to invite everybody who's not in New York, who doesn't have cars. Well, actually, folks who do have cars,
yeah,
who are not in New York, come on out to the Kingsland Manor in Nutley on the 28th. We'll be there from about 6 to 9, playing records and serving some light refreshments. And then from 8 to 9 will be the broadcasts. And we would love to have a big turnout. I'm having lots of my hometown peeps showing up.
Oh, so, yeah. I don't doubt. And where could they find more information on Facebook?
Oh, we've got a page for the event called the Ragged Antique Phonograph Program, live from Kingsland Manor.
Yeah.
Or they can write us, mac@wfmu.org. Or
mike@mikewillcutyou.com.
And we'll let you know that information.
Yep.
So, Mike, today's blog entry on our Tumblr/PhonoDudes entry was about the value of 78s.
Mm.
People are always asking me, how much are my 78s worth?
Right.
And I have two answers I give. One is not much. Well, I don't even let them tell me what they have. I just say not much. Or my second answer is as much as you can get for them, and as little as I can pay for them.
Right.
And really, that's the best answer, because the price of records, like other antiques, rises and falls.
Yeah.
Of course, there was a $37,000 rare blues record that sold the end of 2013. And Robert Johnson records typically sell in the thousands, and it's easy to see $1,000 records across genres.
Right. Right, and it depends what labels, too. If they're a rare label, like you threw a Black Patty.
Oh, sure, any Black Patty record is going to be worth thousands.
Yeah, well, yeah. I knew a dude who he found a cracked Black Patty record through a box, and he got it literally for a dollar, mm-hmm. for $1, and there was a crack going from the center to the out, and ended up selling to Japan for $900.
Yep. So... But it's hard for the average person to know what's valuable.
Right.
It really takes a lot of skill. And what's happened to me in several instances, when people have told me specifically what they had, and I tell them, you know, there's not really a lot of value, but you've got a couple in there that I'd like to give you a few bucks for. They're like, oh, yeah, you're trying to, like, take advantage of me by giving me offering me $5 for these records. No, they're kind of... I'm offering you something fair, and I'd like to just play them.
Yeah. Yeah,
no.
They're
no.
worth these records, $2,
you know,
but I'll give you $5.
I know the game you're playing. You're trying to... tell me that these records are not valid when they're valuable. I'm not falling for this with you. Yeah. I know how you slimy record buyers work.
Yes, we moved to the East Coast. We established connections for 25, 30 years to bulk you out of your $3 records for $1.
And the biggest one I always get, people are like, I want to know how much my records are worth. And I sort of, it's amusing to me. I'm like, okay, what do you got?
Right.
I've got Caruso.
Wow.
Oh, you've got Caruso. Which one? I've got Pagliacci.
Wow.
It's a very popular one. Yes, it was. There are millions of them made and sold. Yes, it's very, very old. Yes, it is. And, you know, I see them all the time. It's a very popular record. It's a fantastic one.
Yeah.
Yeah. How much is it worth? Oh, well, there's so many of them that I would say they're worth a dollar or two. Because he sold so many. It was a million selling record. No, it's got to be worth more than that. Well, you're asking me for my opinion, and that's what I'm saying.
Right.
Well, this is Caruso, you know. It's a one-sided record. Yeah, that's what they did back then with those. Well, I'm going to go ask somebody else. Okay. So people always think their Caruso records are the most valuable, but he made so many, and he was so popular.
Right.
He was one of the first pop stars.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't lessen the fact of his vocal ability, stardom, his success, his talent, just because his records in 21st century are not, thousands of dollars. He's a millionaire in our hearts and ears.
Oh, a lot of the best records are the cheapest ones to buy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the super rare stuff. A lot of that stuff is great, too. But here is probably the record that the people who know the least about records decided is the most valuable and are completely wrong. But it's actually a fantastic record. This really moves me every time I hear it.
Yeah.
It's Enrico Caruso with from Pagliacci Veste la Giubba.
You know, the folks at home have no choice but to listen to this through electricity, through an electrical device, right? Through the radio or smartphone or whatever. But to hear that song the way we get to hear it in the studio, there's really nothing like it.
Oh, it's one of the records that I will put on to really demonstrate the effect of the gramophone on people, because it's such a powerful performance.
Yeah.
And just by listening to it, you could understand how Caruso's voice came through and his charisma, and how the phonograph made him a star, and Caruso made the phonograph a star.
Yeah.
They worked with each other.
It was a win-win. Mm-hmm. I could see that's a good line to put on a t-shirt. He made, if it's a Enrico Caruso t-shirt or something for memorabilia, he made the phonograph. The phonograph made him a star, and he made the phonograph a star.
It's a Jeopardy question.
Yeah.
He made the phonograph a star, and the star and the phonograph made him a star.
What is Enrico Caruso?
Who is Enrico Caruso?
Oh, damn it. He's a person. You know, there's actually, I don't know if it still goes on, but there's a Caruso Museum in Brooklyn.
That's right. I heard about that.
It's a guy's house. But
oh, we got to do that also.
Yeah. I hope it's still going on. I read in this cool underground New York tour book years ago. And
you know, I've heard about it also.
And you never been?
No. It's, yeah. We got to put that on our list, and that's got to be another show that we do.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We'll do it. Live from his house.
Yes. Live from the dude's house. as I've done many shows before.
You're listening live to WFMU. Mac and Mike the Barber here every Tuesday evening, bringing you the Ragged Antique Phonograph program.
Playing you discs and cylinders from the acoustic era and a little beyond.
And beyond. This isn't too far beyond. It's right on the cusp, actually. We're going to go to 1924. I see someone wanted to hear Billy Murray. Luckily for you, I have a vocal refrain he does along with George Olsen in his music. What can I say about it? Nothing really. Let me just play it. My Papa Does in Two Time, No Time.
I may be wrong, but wonderful. I may be wrong, but I think you're swell. I like your style, say, I think it's marvelous. I'm always wrong, so how can I tell? All of my shirts are unsightly, all of my ties are a crime. If they're in you, I pick rightly, it's the very first time. You came along, say, I think you're wonderful. I think you're grand, but I may be wrong. Shirts are unsightly, all of my ties are a crime. If they're in you, I think rightly, it's the very first time. You came along, say, I think you're wonderful. I think you're grand, but I may be wrong.
From 29, Al Katz and his orchestra, I may be wrong, but I think you're wonderful. And then 24, George Olsen and his music featuring Murray with My Papa Doesn't Two Time, No Time.
Nice tuba work.
Yeah, that's shuffling.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
All right, so next we have up, I was having a little Facebook conversation with one of my friends today, and he was telling me about his interest in old Hawaiian-themed songs.
Okay.
And, you know, Hawaii became a sensation around the teens, and then...
Lots
later became Statewood,
songs.
But there was a whole Hawaii boom.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of these cultural booms are reflected in records like King Tut and Hawaii, and we talked about disasters and certain things.
Right,
but,
right.
There is a lot of Hawaiian-themed music that came out. So I was going through records and thinking, if I play this one on the air, it'll become more valuable. Then I could, like, sell it to him for, like, $5 maybe or something.
Well, we
whereas
gotta sign
it. It would be like a $2 record.
Right.
But now it's
bumps
now,
it up.
Now I know what he wants.
Yeah.
And I got him.
Don't reveal what you want.
I mean, this guy, he's come to my place before. He's like a drunken sailor. Comes over, and I'm like, I got this Edison dictaphone machine. Oh, yeah, I'll take that. Hey, I got this old archtop guitar. Oh, yeah, I'll take that. Oh, man, what else do I got? I got this old sock with a hole in it. I can't find the one. Oh, yeah, I'll take that.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So, anyway, so anyway, I wanted to play this for him in this Hawaiian theme. This is the Hawaiian Trio. It is guitar, Hawaiian guitars, xylophone. I guess it's two guitars because it says it's a trio. But it's guitars and xylophone. Hawaiian Twilight, introducing Spanish Moon.
Oh.
Here we go. Thank you. Just like all the Prohibition songs had to quote "How dry I am," all the Hawaiian songs had to quote "Aloha E."
From 1920, that was the Hawaiian Trio.
Let's keep moving along, Mike. We don't have much time.
I know. Let's do it. Here's a.
This is Dr. Clarence Penny with a record from 1914. Decidedly not country, but he was a mandolinist. And before this, mandolin was pretty much all Italian type of very that much Italian feel.
How is it again?
Perfect. That very fast strumming style. But he took it to another level and did something else with the mandolin and made it jaunty and bouncy and fun. Again, 1914, there's no such thing as country, but I consider his music as something along the steps leading to it. So here he is from 1914 with a tune called Indiana Patrol. Indianola Patrol. Thank you.
Molly treats me fine. But what she does, I'll never tell. But what she does, she sure does well. That brand new gal of mine. She makes her walk a chalk line. Now when I lost the old one, I thought I'd forget. But she's the kind of gal that makes a fella forget. Some baby, some honey, that brand new gal of mine. Now I had them thin, and I had them fat, and I had them this, and I had them that. Why, eyes are brown, eyes are blue, why, I even had Bulma's cross-eyed, too. Had them young, I had them old, I had them hot, I had them cold. A good gal is hard to find, but I should worry, because I got mine.
Hey, was that Yerkes Famous Flotilla Orchestra?
That was, complete with world's first rapper. That brand new gal of mine from 1924.
Yerkes was everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, that's going to about do it for us for this week, Mike.
It is, but we got 2 minutes left to relax.
To ruminate.
To reminisce. Let's reminisce about the last 58 minutes.
No, let's talk about the future.
Let's talk about the future.
I want to mention more about events that are going on, Mike Moore. Like, let's
look up
things that are happening in the future. I'm going this weekend to an event. You know, we like to go to these dress-up events, these period events. I'm going to a Shanghai Mermaid event on Saturday night at the Downtown Association. It's Casino de Paris, so it's sort of late 20s debauchery Paris.
Yeah.
And it's open for everybody to go to. So dress up in your finest and meet me down there. What are you doing this weekend?
What am I doing? I think I'm going to go to sleep. I'm burnt out from Viva. I am.
You had a big weekend.
Yeah. I mean, it's literally, I mean, people, the things go till 7 in the morning.
Oh, man.
Literally. I mean, we watched the sunrise.
Wow.
One night. And so anyway, stay tuned next for Irene because it's kind of exciting. She's got I Think Like Midnight coming up next on her show. And it has two members from the Dead Milkmen, Joe and Dean.
That's right. And we'll be back next week with more stuff. In the meantime, again, you could follow our blog on Tumblr, Phono Dudes, and you can follow our other adventures through Instagram. I am Phonograph DJ Mac.
And I'm Mike Wilcutchew.
And thank you for joining us for this hour of lo-fi entertainment. We're always happy to be here and do it for you.
Yeah, and we'll be back next week, same time, same place, same channel. As always, you can listen to the archives, get the WFMU app, and that's it. Until next week, sayonara.
Nighty-night, everybody.
You're listening to WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, in Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at wfmu.org. Ta-ta.
two, three. Tower of love, you let down your hair. The air seemed to sing with the first song of spring. When